It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Hey, Batman.
Hey, Spider-Man.
I watched Riff Tracks the other day. That was the the Wonderful World of Oz, which was, it was a 1969 micro-budget production by the same guy who directed the Thumbelina portion of Santa Claus and the Ice Cream Bunny, version of the second Oz book. And I was so pleased because it made a strong sad reference.
What?
It made a strong sad reference. There was a character that at one point they were like, so-and-so voiced by Strong Sad, because it did kind of sound like,
I was like this all the time.
And I love when they make those references. All right. So, hello. Sorry, everybody. There's a window open because it's not hot. So we don't have the AC on, but we have the window open. And William, as usual, brought his entourage. I just noticed something.
What?
Your Batman hat is a Batman OnStar hat?
Is it? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Could be.
What is that?
A few years ago, OnStar had commercials that featured Batman and the Batmobile and everything else. And somehow I don't know how I got it. I mean, I didn't order it or anything. I didn't buy it at a store.
Called into a radio station.
I don't know what it was. Somehow, some promotional somewhere was giving them out or something. But
I think we're going to have to, I think you're going to have to close that window.
Because there's something going
on.
Yeah,
they're talking on a really loud tannoy and stuff. And I think, yeah.
Is it going to get hot in here?
I don't know. We're only doing it for an hour. So it frequently gets hot when we're podcasting, so. I'm just excited we're only podcasting one episode. Yeah, so OnStar Batman is closing the window right now.
What?
So.
What did you think was going to happen?
He thought you were leaving or something. I don't know. to all my audiophiles out there, who finally, after years of asking for feedback, are giving us feedback on the volume. I have adjusted it again. I found a couple of secret settings that could make a difference. So let's see what's going to happen. I think I will still normalize this one. And then we'll see what that does. I'll try not to laugh too much. But the problem is I'm really funny.
I think I'm the one that laughs loudly and makes the problem.
Because the problem is also that I'm really funny. See, yeah. we both agree that I'm funny, so that's the problem. hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast that is really committed for years to a marketing campaign of basically saying, yeah, we're pretty terrible. And I got to say, that campaign is not working out real well for us, but I don't think we're stopping.
No.
Truth and honesty and consistency.
That's the big one.
We need a Latin motto or something. We got to throw those into a Latin translator, making a great episode title if I was going to take that kind of effort. It's hilarious because Latin translation is so tricky. So like in the game, oh, by the way, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 390.
In the game that I'm about to run, the Dark Harbor campaign,
yeah.
I put in the motto for the town, and I do that by going to Google Translate and playing with Latin phrases and stuff.
Sure.
And I found something, and I forget what it is, but I very much, like, there's a lot of secrets involved in the town, so I'm trying to do something that, like, thematically is a hint or an Easter egg kind of thing. But it gets really weird because if you put in English to Latin and you type in something in English, it will give you the Latin version. There's a button where you can reverse them. It's like, so then it's Latin into English.
Sure, right.
And if you hit that several times, the English translation and the Latin translation both end up changing a lot. And I swear one time I put in the exact same phrase and did that for a while and it changed into something different than it had the last time. It's very odd. And at least a couple of them I was like, ooh, this is kind of cool. It's like if you put it in here and hit the button several times, you get even more Easter eggs. And then there's other times I'm like, no, now it ended with like the word weather. I'm like, that's not a town motto. Weather? No, it's not. Not even for the Pacific Northwest. For those of you just joining us, let's run down how this show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, sexy people, draw, or don't draw those note cards. That spoiler alert to something ahead.
Yeah.
Cool people, sexy people, you people, write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Right. William's coaching me with his chin right now. I get it right, and he's like, yes, that's actually what happens.
Yes, you're getting it right.
They write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's eminently equipped servants. I feel like that was like a weird euphemism, and I didn't intend it that way, and I apologize. But we draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. And it's been 2 weeks.
Right. And so, the reason it was 2 weeks was because of something you had going on. So you probably have a lot to say. So you might as well just say it.
I have a bajillion things to say.
Well, there you go.
But then we'll never find out what happened to you during your 2 weeks.
It never matters what I did in my 2 weeks.
Only to you, it matters to the rest of us. Doesn't matter to me what I did those 2 weeks.
I can run it down real quick. I went to the memorial service for our friend from
Plexus. You actually got there. Okay. Weirdly, Trish and I ran into Wendy, and she was asking, and she hadn't managed to get there either.
Yeah, there were a few other applied people there. There was an opportunity for people to make some remarks, and I just tried to say something kind of on behalf of applied, because his mom had talked about him and did like a little slideshow presentation kind of thing, and she mentioned Applied Systems.
He was there a long time.
And she said that she expressed her confusion as to why he was even hired there, because he didn't know anything about computers when he started. So as part of my remarks, I said, well, Applied Systems, as a general policy, I mean, we knew that we could teach people computers, but we couldn't, it was really hard or impossible to teach people how to be decent customer service or you know, treat people with decency or whatever, with things that Mark could do very well. Just, you know, he just came to us with that. And so that's why. And I also expressed that those of us who were there, because Applied Systems closed 12 years ago, right? Some people can't even remember where they worked 12 years ago, much less who they worked with.
Yeah.
And here this guy passes away and people that he worked with 12 years ago show up at his funeral. So I made the point that we weren't here because he was good at being a technician, which he was good at, but we were here because he was good at being a human being, and that we missed him and that we were sad he was gone. And it was a huge turnout, lots of people there, a handful of Applied Systems people, I'm sure people from other places he's worked.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that it was like 4 weeks after he passed, so...
Damn.
And I'm not sure what they did with him. They might have cremated him and spread his ashes already. They didn't talk about that.
There was no coffin.
No, in fact, there was the Lensing Funeral Home owns a building next door to it where it has a sort of an all-purpose center type of place that it rents out for all kinds of things, but sometimes it'll do memorial services.
Oh, okay.
But no, there wasn't any like urn or casket or anything there. So I don't know what happened with him, but as I understood it, they had this memorial service and they're going to have another one in Connecticut because he was actually born in Boston, I think. So he's got family all over the place.
Okay. It's because that sentence didn't track.
Well, what do you mean?
Because Boston's not in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. But no, but Connecticut is where his family is.
What, okay.
I don't know why he was born in Boston because they were visiting there or something. I don't know how that worked out. But anyway, he's got family all over. Like his brother is a fairly well-known musician in the area, Dave Zolo. And he was in Italy at the time of Mark's death.
Oh,
so
geez.
He had to make arrangements to fly back. And so I think that was what caused the delay in the memorial service. But it was a very good service. He was a great guy, and it's a very sad thing. He was only 51. I didn't find out even what happened, except that he the night before he left work flushed and sweating and clearly having some problems. It sounded like whatever took his life that night. Must have been a heart attack, I'm thinking.
Well, and that was what we were theorizing too. But I mean, there's a lot of things that can just, I mean, heart attack, aneurysm, stroke, things like this that can hit a person, and then it's up to sort of how healthy you are outside of that. Because like I found out a few years ago that my boss at my first job, who was like, he'd probably be about the same age now. He was just like a few years older than me. Just had an aneurysm at work and was gone in like 8 seconds. But it's because he also was very overweight and he smoked and all
right,
stuff. And Zolo, bless his heart, was not in great shape.
No, although he walked everywhere. He never did have a car. He walked everywhere he went. But a stroke or an aneurysm doesn't usually exhibit those types of symptoms.
Oh, is it? Okay, I don't.
I'm talking about his being flushed and sweating and agitated and things like that. But anyway, so what happened was...
The experience has very much been having me focus on the, like, you can just die.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I'm like, there's a whole bunch of things that are basically like, you're just hanging out and then...
Yeah, exactly.
And not a bus was not involved or anything. No. It's just you.
No, he made it home. He didn't show up for work the next day, which was so unusual for him. Someone immediately went over to his house to see if something was wrong, and they found him there. So yeah, a very sad thing. Mark Zolo, great guy. So that was too bad. As far as other things, I saw Lost Boys. I've never seen it before.
Holy crap! I'm so glad we did not skip over this.
Well, okay, so... Okay, so there are a lot of things that I haven't seen that I have no interest in seeing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I see them anyway.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10 when that happens, everything I thought...
You're like, I would have been fine.
Exactly. And even the 1 time out of 10 where I'm like, oh, that wasn't so bad, it's not like a life changer.
So
as a rule in life, if I don't have a good first impression about something, I just skip it because I'm almost always right too.
But was Lost Boys in this category?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yes, absolutely it was.
Oh, see, because I can think of at least one strong argument of why you should have seen Lost Boys,
okay.
Even knowing you.
Well, right, and now I'm of two minds about it because I thought it was terrible, and it was pretty much terrible in all the ways I expected it was going to be terrible. But... on the other hand, I don't think it really sunk in until I saw it that they were, you know, trying to kind of mash together Peter Pan and vampires or whatever. And the truth is, I actually like that idea. After I saw it, I was very interested in how it developed and stuff. And I found out that, you know, they'd actually intended to have younger people, and then they changed their minds about that. So, you know, if someone... were saying they wanted to take another shot at this, but not just to remake the original or pay homage to the original, but actually maybe try to make it make more sense.
Yeah.
I would be very interested in that. I think that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not what happened with that movie.
No, it's not.
And the reason why I would say there is an argument for you to see it is because it, like, however you feel about the way vampires have been betrayed. Freudian slip. Portrayed in popular culture over the various decades. And I know your feelings on this, but Lost Boys made that happen for a good decade and a half. Mm. Lost Boys determined what vampires were like for until the mid-90s.
Well, yeah.
Basically, I mean, until White Wolf came along.
Another thing I haven't seen, but I probably will see, kind of just because, you know, I am interested in I like Bram Stoker's version of Dracula, but that's made me interested in general and how vampires have been portrayed in media. But I haven't seen everything. I haven't seen a vampire movie. Obviously, I hadn't seen that one. So I might see Interview with a Vampire. I've never seen that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I haven't seen it, though, is because my understanding is fans of the Anne Rice novels didn't like it very much.
Well, and that's the thing. As somebody who could not care less about the Anne Rice novels.
Well, I couldn't either. But
I really liked it.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know enough about the Anne Rice novels to know if it fits in this category, but it may be one of those things like Constantine movie or Lynch's version of Dune, where they don't do well with the source material, but they are good things on their own. Constantine is a good movie. It's just a shitty movie about the Hellblazer comic.
Well,
and the same thing with Dune. Like, that's a shitty version of Frank Herbert's Dune as a movie, but it's a cool sci-fi movie.
Well, that might segue well into the other thing I saw, which was Ready Player One.
Oh.
Which, my feeling about that film was, it constantly gave me the feeling like, it wasn't bad. It was a good movie. I mean, I liked it all right, but I constantly had the feeling like, this thing was probably better in the book, you know?
Yeah.
This thing was probably better in the book.
Moments in that, but I will say, well, and I did say at the time, the screenplay differs greatly from the book.
Yeah.
But it really captures the essence of the book. And I think in some ways evolves it to something that makes more sense now.
Okay.
Than when that book was originally written.
Yeah, I kind of got that sense when I read the wiki article about it. Yeah. I thought, okay, I can see why they changed these things.
There's some cool stuff. It is very much a Wade book, but the movie gave a lot of stuff over to Artemis to do instead of Wade, which I think it was. I mean, it was weird for me because I'm like, that's not what happened. Why is this? But I think that was useful and it made her more involved. And she is a very interesting character that honestly did not get developed well in the books. Or in the book.
Well, there were a couple. I was saying this to Jazz. I was talking to her about it. There were a couple times in the film where her particular moments of agency were taken away from her by the main male character. And
I think that may have been some struggle with, like, so much of her plot line was actually him.
Yeah.
And this whole resistance thing plot line didn't exist in the book. It wasn't a thing. It was all just literally Gunters.
Interesting.
It's I mean, if you read fiction, I would recommend the book, but
I might the things that I thought would be more interesting were actually the background of the political and economic stuff going on,
which does show up more in the book.
I mean, it seemed like an interesting speculative historical perspective. And that's the stuff that I thought might be more interesting. But like, you know, the challenges in the movie are quite different from the ones in the book.
Very, and fewer.
Yeah. And, but also I think, I don't see how the ones in the book would have been cinematic.
No. A lot of it isn't.
Yeah.
But some of it, a lot of the climax of that movie is pretty much like it was in the book, which was fun because in the book it's very exciting, and to see it was even more exciting. So that was cool. The relationships are very much abridged, as one would have to be in a film, and that is disappointing because I think the relationships are interesting. Shoto and Daito come along like they don't, they aren't friends at the beginning, and they become friends, and how they do that is differently. Weirdly, everybody lived really close to each other in real life in this, in the movie, because had not the case in the books. Or I keep saying books. It's one book. One book.
But yeah, those seem like the biggest thing. Well, but also today was John McCain's funeral, and I was watching Joe Biden's eulogy, and it was really good. I mean, I recommend people watch it.
I heard it was, I mean, I saw the article. I didn't read the article.
It was good. It was good. Yeah. He said some, I think, some very important things. I don't think they're, sadly, I'm very pessimistic about those things having an impact on the greater culture, but they spoke to the culture as it is, and I thought it was interesting.
I'm kind of keeping back from it because I have really conflicted feelings about John McCain.
I'm sure a lot of people do. Sure.
And he's dead now. So I'm like, this is a perfect opportunity to just let that go.
Right. But I, but what was interesting about what Joe Biden's comments was, there was a lot about him, you know, a lot of positive things about McCain because they were friends. But he talks a lot about just how things are and how things were. And when he thinks things started to go downhill... Yeah. And so that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So even if you don't know how you feel about McCain or Biden, for that matter, you know, his historical perspective was sort of part of what he was saying, and it was very interesting.
And also, if you want to go out like a baller on your deathbed, dictate a list of people who are specifically not invited to your funeral, because that's fucking hilarious.
Well, yeah, it was an interesting day. But anyhow. All the stuff you want to talk about. Let's get
so many things. Where do I start? I try to start with the easiest stuff first. Finished book I was reading, which was the last book in a series of urban fantasy books by Kate Griffin, who's a pseudonym for somebody else. Last one was called The Glass God. I enjoyed it. It's a very interesting series. I had talked about it before. It's a British urban fantasy series, and unlike, say, Dresden, it's urban fantasy, like it's not this magic and technology don't get along kind of thing. It's that as technology and urban environments progressed and evolved, magic evolved with it. So like the spirits come from the steam that comes out of the steam tunnels and stuff like that. It's literally urban magic, and that's kind of cool how they play with that. It's set in London, which I have a lot of fun with. But the original four books in the series are about this one guy and crazy shit that happens to him, and then the last two books are a spin-off of that, and he's still sort of a character, but it's about this woman who discovers she's a shaman, which basically means she can see truths and walk the path and things, and apparently they're very uncommon nowadays, and she ends up starting essentially a community support group for magic and magic-related people that find difficulty... I shouldn't even say people, creatures that find difficulty interacting in daily life. And she's very much in that vein, and it's Britain, so it's got this very... So it's government-run, you know?
Okay.
So there's a lot of her... She gets thrust in these situations where she has to deal with these life-or-death crises and things, like the last guy did, but... Her take is very much from a community support perspective. So there's lots of her, like, trying to get things from the side of the villains and stuff like that and understand and, like, discussing if we're using oppressive language and stuff like that. And it's really cute. But it's not... But she's very real about it. Like, she's... It's not somebody who's just silly and clueless and obsessed with that stuff. She's trying really hard, and she's studying books on management and things. She's trying to learn how to do this, but she's also like 24 and like kind of punkish and stuff, and so it's all very weird for her, but that was fun, and I do recommend those books. I finished Horizon Zero Dawn.
Okay.
Was very pleased with the ending. I was a little surprised. I assumed they would do a sequel, and in fact, one is supposedly in the works someplace. I always assumed it would be like a Fallout thing where it's like, we're just going to set another story in this world. Because this story only took place in like a space that encompassed like three states in the former U.S.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of world left. And a lot of the shit we were dealing with has global implications.
Right, right.
So I assumed we just, you know, we go someplace else and things like that. But they put a hook at the end to totally have a direct sequel. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised about that. And in fact, some of the things you told me were arguably lies of omission earlier so as not to give spoilers. And I appreciate that.
Lies of omission. I didn't intend to mislead you at all.
There were just a few things that I was like, I wonder if they're going to address that. And you're like, no, they never explained that. And I'm like, they didn't. But they did address later the fact that they hadn't explained things and that that could be a thing later. Well, which, again, I'm glad you didn't tell
me. I could possibly even have missed that. I don't know.
Yeah, you drink a lot when you're watching your wife play games. So. but no, I was very pleased. It's probably in my top five games. It was just such a great combination of I really love the story, I really love the characterization, I really love the world, and I really love the mechanics. It was really nice to play, and it's sort of where I get it with Assassin's Creed. I really like the story and the setting, but just the mechanics and the gameplay are also really awesome. Mm. And that's a rarity. Like, Fallout is awesome. Until this last one, the gameplay's been not as great.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And I mean, it's getting there, but it's seldom that I find both together. And so that was cool. I saw a bunch of movies. Some of which I don't think are worth talking about. I did see Crawl in the theater for Riff Tracks. That was pretty cool. It was weird. I laughed a lot at the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I watch a lot of these Riff Tracks lives on Amazon Prime, and those are recorded from ages ago or whatever. So it was weird to remind myself this was actually live. And I'm like, oh wait, they're literally making these jokes as I'm
right now.
And there were a bunch of people there and I laughed a lot. There were other times I also rolled my eyes. And some of that was because some of the jokes just weren't that funny. And some of it is because I kind of unironically like Crawl. I mean, it's a low budget 80s sci-fi movie clearly trying to cash in on Star Wars,
right.
Like so many. But in that vein, I don't know, it was pretty good. I kind of like it. They made lots of jokes about the fact the movie has a lot of long bits where you're just sort of getting landscape shots and no dialogue.
Sure.
And especially a lot of like people climbing mountains and stuff like
right,
that.
Yeah.
And they're like, nothing's happening. And they were making jokes about that. I'm like, yeah. But it's also really gorgeous cinematography with really cool music. So I'm cool with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right, right.
And I mean, and yeah, there's so much, there's some not great acting and a lot of it is overacting, which is how I always talk about how they act so hard in
mm-hmm.
that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not that, I mean, I kind of just like it. But I mean, there was plenty of stuff to make fun of too, but I do, and I laughed at it a lot. They had some really good jokes in there. They managed to have three separate Liam Neeson Taken jokes, which was pretty impressive. It was also really funny. There's a thing near the end where a fight is happening and one of our characters we've learned before can shapeshift. He's like a wizard or something. And I've seen this movie many times. So I know like in this fight, then he shapeshifts into a tiger and they get a real tiger to like fight the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I don't think it was a problem in Nashville, but there were problems with the streaming to us, so it started cutting out in places, and it cut out during that fight before he changed, and it came back after he changed, so you could tell the people in the room who had never seen the movie before, because they're like, ah! Because suddenly there's a tiger in the shot, and they're like, what is this? So that was kind of fun. But yeah, I think my favorite part was just being able to see it on the big screen, which was kind of cool. So that was good. So two other movies that are worth mentioning. I'm going to start with a better one because I have less to say about it. Black Klansman. We saw Black Klansman.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure it's my favorite movie of 2018 so far.
Mm.
Really, really impressive. Quite funny. It is ostensibly a comedy drama, I think.
Okay.
Pretty heavy too, though. I mean, you don't go into it without being prepared to have some shit told to you. I'm really pleased in that I'm psyched about Spike Lee again.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's been a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Do the Right Thing will always have a huge place in my heart, and it's very dated now, but that was a huge deal, and it was really impressive piece of film craft. Stuff right after that, She's Got to Have It, things like that. Some of those have not aged real well and are a little problematic for me. And then we just got a huge swath of mediocre shit I don't care about, where he was sort of just dabbling in things.
Sure.
But this is unquestionably a Spike Lee film, and it's impressive as hell. And Adam Driver's really awesome. But the big thing is, you've not lived till you've seen Topher Grace play David Duke. It's amazing. And he does an incredible job. I don't give Topher Grace a lot of credit for his acting. I'm going to have to reevaluate that after this. It was really impressive. Good acting all around. Great soundtrack. And yeah, some serious stuff. They are very heavy-handed in drawing the parallels between this instance and this story, which is more or less a true story. In fact, the only complaints about the truth of this story is that it's ended too soon, because this is a story about a black man who helped infiltrate the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
But he and his team also spent much more time infiltrating the Black Power movement. And that's not addressed here at all, so that's a little problematic. But they like I said, they're very heavy-handed in drawing the parallels between what was happening in this time, in this story, and what is happening in this country today. But heavy-handed or not, they're nonetheless accurate. Like, it's chilling. Because you can see it. You can very clearly see, hey, this is how things are right now.
Yeah, there's no reason that a movie like that shouldn't just be of historical interest. There's no reason that it should be relevant
and
at
it absolutely
all
is.
Today.
And in fact, it ends with some current footage of things. I genuinely think that's why that's very much why it was made right now,
because
it's based off a book that's been around a little while.
Right.
And it's got some very interesting complex areas. What I find fascinating, he directed it. It has 4 listed writers, but it feels incredibly cohesive.
Okay.
And normally you don't get that. You see a bunch of writers, you're like, oh crap! Oh look, this part was from one. Feels really cohesive. It has a lot of complexity to it that I like, but it can be very jarring. But it's amazing. I recommend it to anyone and everyone. Check it out, and it's also kind of fun to poke fun at real aspects of racists being kind of dumb.
Right.
Like, you get some pleasure out of that.
And at the end of the day, racism is so stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so dumb.
And that's the thing. You're presented with, like, the arguments here, and it's just like...
It's delusional to the highest degree.
And there's a lot of complicated characters between our hero and our antagonist. There's a lot of other people, white people mostly, but not entirely. There's some black who have tricky places in the race relations, and you're like, they're good guys except when they're not, but or you know, I'm with them except maybe not in the, like, it shows some very complex characters in that sense.
Sure.
And I mean it was disconcerting at the time. I spent the police chief in this movie, I spent a lot of time not knowing how I felt about him. And it seemed to change a lot. There's other characters that are introduced that are like, And by the end, you're like, oh no, that's one of my favorite characters, like right. that. And you can see a lot of things, and it talks a lot about what goes on with the police as well. And it's just an impressive movie. Like, I think it's my favorite movie so far this year. So check it out, Black Klansman. And then the other movie we watched just last night, it was Trish's date night, and we went to Maggie's Farm Fire Grilled Pizza, or Wood Fired Pizza. You know this place?
No.
It's in University Heights. I didn't know about it either. Apparently it's been there for about a year. It's really good. I don't tend to go for a place like that because I'm like, so you have the one thing, and it's that Neapolitan-style pizza, which I don't really care about. But no, it's incredible stuff, and they have a bunch of their desserts were just amazing. It's like really good Italian food, basically. But it was really nice. So, yeah, if you are local, Maggie's Farm is the name of the place. It's in University Heights. Check it out. It's super tasty. And then we came home, and we ended up watching a movie. I remember having seen a trailer at some point. But that was it. Called Marjorie Prime. You familiar with this?
Nope.
John Hamm. Tim Robbins. Gina Davis. The lead who actually plays Marjorie. I can't remember which actress it is, but it's somebody you know. It's difficult to explain. Let me start by saying I liked it a lot.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic. I recommend it. Trish, less so.
Okay.
But there are some circumstances for it. And part of it, she thinks, is possibly that she, while watching it, thought I didn't like it. And some of it, and this may be a huge one, it's based on a play.
Okay.
And though they do some cool things with the filming, you can tell, like, I didn't know until the end, but I'm like, oh, of course it was based off a play.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do not like films based on plays. They're like, what's the point? Like, you're not, they're different things, and if you've got a play, I mean, you know, sometimes you take a play and you make a movie about it, but there are times where you just do a movie of that play, and people don't like it, and I love them.
Well, you're,
I always love
them. My opinion about that is this. You can take a play and turn it into a movie, like, say, The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
And The Odd Couple is a good example of how to make a movie that's based on a play. Because when you're watching it, you don't feel like you're watching a play. You feel like you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to make a movie that feels like you're watching a play, like a lot of David Mamet movies
feel like
you're watching a play, I would be perfectly fine with you filming the staging of the play.
Yeah.
I've seen things like that that I like a lot.
Yeah.
Where either they just film the play as it's normally staged, or they'll do some special thing where they'll stage it, but still with cameras and
in
various positions. And I love that. But I either want it to be a film or a filmed play, not a film that sounds like a play. Because
yeah.
that really annoys me for some reason.
And you are not alone. You are in the majority on this.
Yeah.
I am in the minority in that I fucking love them.
Well, and the thing is, I don't mind David Mamet as a writer. Like, in fact, if it's a movie that he's written, even though I'm annoyed by how play-like it seems, I'll still watch it because it's so well-written and usually so well-acted. That'll annoy me still.
The Sum of Us, an Australian film that used to be one of my favorite films ever and has a very young Russell Crowe in it, was another example for me. And that one had a lot, because that play had a lot of soliloquies to the audience,
mm-hmm.
and they left those in the movie. And for a lot of people, that was like, but I don't know. I just love it.
Maybe I wouldn't mind that. I don't know.
This didn't have that, but you can tell.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly, the film is almost entirely just scenes of people talking. It is a sci-fi film. Here's what I will say. The beginning of the film is an older woman living in her home, widow, who is starting to suffer from dementia. And she has been given a prime, which is a holographic artificial intelligence designed to look like her husband and designed to over time, as it learns more about the person in question, is able to more mimic that person, and is supposed to be therapeutic and comforting to the individual.
Okay.
And in this particular one, she's an older woman, and she has chosen a version of her husband when he was younger, like in his 40s, played by John Hamm.
Okay.
And so she talks with him, and she talks about... She tells him more about himself so that he can learn more, but he already knows some things and stuff like that. And her interacting with him fairly early in that relationship, I think, is the start of that movie. Also living in the house, we learn, are her daughter, played by Gina Davis, and her daughter's husband, played by Tim Robbins. And her daughter, the mother and daughter, do not get along well. And she gets along pretty well with the husband, although she didn't used to. That's a thing. And that's sort of where we start, is with these arguably four characters. And then a lot of things happen in the movie. The movie goes over a fairly long span of time. And it deals a lot with memory. Memory is a big focus of the film, and how you remember events in your life and how other people remember them and how various memories influence each other. It is very... It's very arty. It's very, some could say, pretentious in some ways. It is very full of itself. It knows it's being super profound. And everybody acting in it knows they're in a very super profound movie. But they do well with that. Yeah, I found it fascinating. The weird thing for it for me is I really liked it intellectually, and I enjoyed it, and like I said, I recommend it. It's a film that, by all rights, should be very emotional, and it didn't get me in the feels. And I think it's because, as much as I enjoy it, and I enjoy the characters and the dialogue and everything, I don't think I relate to any of them in there. I don't see myself in any of them.
Sure.
Whatever my issues are with family and past and things don't particularly match up with anybody in this film. So I appreciated it as a story and as thought-provoking.
Sure.
But it didn't get me in the feels. I think for a lot of people it will. It is free on Amazon Prime right now. I mean, like, if you're a Prime member. So I would recommend it. It's not super long. It's like an hour 40. It's called Marjorie Prime. Yeah, and I thought it was pretty cool. I think that's mostly. I'm still going to the gym every day.
That's good.
Doing well. By this time, this day next week, I have an appointment at the doctor again, so we'll see how my numbers look.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope they're good.
Me too. This weekend, Trish's little sister is coming, and she's gonna GM for us. We're gonna play Necessary Evil. We'll see how that goes.
Tomb Raider video game's out 2 weeks from Friday.
Oh, really? Already?
Look forward to that.
1 week from Friday is the Spider-Man game, which I didn't hear about till today.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get that.
I've never bought one, and I've never really been interested, but when I think about it, an open world city where I could swing on webs would probably be fun.
Something I forgot to mention. My brother from Alaska was in town last weekend.
We knew that was coming.
Yeah, so I saw him. That was good. I didn't see... The whole reason he came into town was to drop my niece off to college in Indianola, Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just like 30 miles due south from Des Moines.
Yeah.
And I didn't see her. But I saw him. But
she's in Indianola now, yeah, so in theory you can go visit her.
I will be seeing her is the thing. So the whole family got together, except she stayed in Indianola, but my brother and...
And the phantom power on for some reason.
My brother and his wife were both there, and we had dinner in Des Moines, so that was nice.
Cool.
And another thing, there were two things I wanted to ask you about. First of all,
okay.
With the Briar Rose Project.
Yes.
Did you record your part more than once? Like, did I come to you and say, hey, it's a little dirty, can you try it again kind of deal? Or
I don't think we did more than one session. I do think we did more than one take.
Okay.
Or I say we. I think I recorded it on my own.
Yeah, you did, but...
But yeah, no, I think I gave you like 3 or 4 takes of each of them.
Okay, because the guy who's cutting it all together is sending me pieces of it that completed or whatever. And some of your parts sound fine, but other parts I'm not sure. But there was another person who we had to go back and record all of their stuff again because the original recording didn't quite sound right. So I'll listen to some parts of what he sent me, and it'll be this actor's first take, which doesn't sound very good. And then I'll listen to another part, and it's their second take, and I have to remind him, hey, you need to replace that actor's recording with the second recording. And so I heard some of your stuff, and it sounded fine in one sequence that he sent me, but it didn't sound very good in another sequence. And I was trying to remember, is that because I went back to you and said, hey, could you do this again because it doesn't sound very good?
I don't think so. I think I just did several takes. But also, this was early days of me learning how to run this. I think that was done on the snowball.
Yeah,
I
mean, probably.
So if you wanted me to redo any of that, still I could.
I'll let you know. Okay. I have to find out. And the other thing I wanted to ask about was, you were talking about things being pretentious or whatever. That ghost, was it Ghost Story?
A Ghost Story.
Or what was
a ghost story?
What was the other title? You
Pie Eating with Rooney Mara.
Yeah. Anyway, there was that long sequence in the middle of it where the guy was talking about people wanting to live on and all that stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question about that because, you know, ever since I left home, I've heard people talk about this. People wanting a legacy, people wanting to live on and all this stuff.
Yep.
And to be honest, I've often been kind of baffled by that because this isn't what I grew up with. I mean, when I grew up, the purpose of your life wasn't to leave a legacy or to live on somehow or anything else. And so this idea...
What was the purpose of your life?
Well, it was to make... to me, my observation was, it was like to make your community better somehow. Or at least to prevent it from getting worse. You know, you raised your children, you helped people around the community. When you passed away, you wanted to have made enough of an impact that people would show up at your funeral and so on and so forth. But you didn't do things because you thought you would be remembered afterwards. In fact, you were pretty certain you wouldn't be. And that's okay because you'll be dead, so who cares? So it's all about, you know, you have kids and you have friends and you have a community and you do your best for it. And then when you're gone, it goes on without you and it forgets you eventually. And that's how life goes. So it's not really, there's just not even really a thought about you living on through your kids or through your accomplishments or anything like that. You just live and do your thing and then that's it.
And yeah, that's a highly unusual viewpoint in this day and age.
Well, is that so? Because
absolutely.
Because, like I said, when
I would venture a guess that it's always been a fairly unusual viewpoint. Because I think this is all tied up in people's fear of death.
Right, but I think, okay, there are existential issues that are pretty universal, including, like you say, fear of death. But there are lots of ways to cope with that that don't have to involve you thinking about your legacy or anything else going on after you. You can cope with death by going, well, that's just how it's going to be, and not worry about it. And just try to live the best life you can while you're alive, and not really worry about what happens afterwards.
Okay. What's another way?
Well, another way is to worry about what happens afterwards and to focus everything on that and to be totally obsessed with what you think you're going to leave behind.
All right, so there's the version that you knew and the version that you're confused by. Give me a third one.
There could be, let me try to think of something that would be like a composite. So,
but you're still operating with the same two basic things. Basically,
well, I'm just using that as a handy way to come up with a third way quickly. I
think for almost everybody, it basically comes down to you accept death, or you try desperately to be immortal in some fashion.
The quick, handy
version of immortality is kids.
I guess. I mean, I suppose you could put them in those two categories.
That's the traditional method, is kids. But a lot of other people have other versions of legacy.
I'm just saying that I'm not sure. I mean, the way the guy presented it in the movie was that this is how human beings work. That human beings are always looking for some kind of legacy or a way to live on. And I'm not sure that's true. I think that's a cultural...
Well, no. Remember, this is a shitty movie. No, it is a cultural thing, but it is a widespread cultural thing.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. But
Well, there's a class aspect. You want a legacy if you consider yourself significant at all. And in this day and age, again, I don't like that phrase. I should not be using that phrase so much. But in the current climate, I think one could make the argument that in the past, there has been a sort of bottom class of society that just sort of lived their life and died and didn't think about what that was going to mean or anything like that. A serf class, if you will. But always people of society and aristocracy want to make an impression and be considered important even after they are gone. So I think there's a class aspect to it as well. But also, we now live in a society where everybody thinks they're middle class.
Right. Well, I mean...
The internet has not improved. The internet has made this much worse because now everybody thinks they can have a legacy. Everybody thinks their opinions are important. Everybody thinks they're an influencer. People are fighting about a puddle getting smaller in gameplay footage of the Spider-Man game that's coming out next week. You have to think of yourself as fairly important to think that your opinion on that matters enough to even type it into a forum post.
Okay, but like both sides of my mom and my mom's family, my dad's family, and my dad's family lived in Marion County, Iowa, and my mom's family lived in Adair County, Iowa, were both the same in this way, where like if you asked anything about their parents or their ancestors or anything, I don't know. Why do you want to know about that? And that wasn't just them not feeling comfortable talking about these things, but there was also a clear impression that, you know, if they were concerned about their own legacy, they would have been concerned about their parents' legacy. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, I want people to talk about me when I'm dead, so I'm going to talk about these people when they're dead, kind of deal. But there was this general thing about, you don't have to worry about people who are gone. I don't want you to worry about me when I'm gone. Like, my grandfather was not going to leave my dad the farm. He was going to sell it and move into town, and eventually he'd die and he'd be buried in the cemetery. He didn't think of himself as setting up any kind of legacy or anything for his son. His son was going to do his own thing, and that was it. And I didn't grow up with this sense of... Something that I know is unusual for my upbringing is, even though I was raised Christian, I wasn't raised believing in heaven or that people go to heaven right when they die, kind of thing. There was a belief in like a resurrection sometime in the future that God would determine, and nobody knows when it is. But immortality in my religious upbringing was hugely de-emphasized. And more emphasized was, you got one shot at this. You get one life. Make it count, make it worth it, and don't worry about what's going to come afterwards, including your own legacy or anything like that. Just focus on what you can do for the world while you're alive. And so I just got this overwhelming impression in my own upbringing that you don't really focus on what people are going to say about you after you're dead. You just try to do the best you can right here. And it is true, if you make the right decisions, you do the right stuff, you're probably going to have a well-attended funeral, but that's not the point. And then after it's a well-attended funeral, 10 years later, no one's going to remember who you are anyway. And that's not the, so that doesn't matter. That's not the point of anything. And right, having kids, but even kids, you have kids, not because of how you're going to live on through them, but how they can make the world better, hopefully the same way that you did, not for your sake or for your legacy, but just because that's how it should be. That's just the right thing to do. Yeah. When I was watching the film and I heard him talking about all this, it just rang so hollow to me. Like, is that really how, are people really just fixated on that? And this person saying that that's what rules everybody's life. And that seemed a little odd to me. And I wasn't even sure if that was true.
Okay. 3 points. One, again, shitty movie. Two, my memory of this monologue is less the fixation and obsession, like that this is a thing people do in their lives, but not like this is their pinpoint and all they focus on.
Okay.
But I refer you to point one first. And point three, and this is the important one, and I've used this before and I'm going to use this again, and I know you know this. You have learned this over time. Your family and the way you were raised and the outlook your parents and environment gave you is highly unusual, not only because of your class and location growing up, but even within your class and location growing up.
Yeah, I do have to admit that's true.
Your family, in what I think is a very cool way, was really weird. And raised you in ways that a lot of... And I have smaller versions of this, because there are a lot of things my parents didn't do and didn't put on me that I saw all my friends having done to them. And I always liked the issues that I saw my friends having that I didn't have because my parents didn't raise me that way. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, I discovered that there were other things that have happened. And this happens in your case, is that sometimes you haven't got a good picture of what, not humans, but what generally most of the society around now, and certainly the society you live in,
well, Americans.
Is like, well, and the Western world, yeah, and even arguably Americans. The modern world.
Yeah, right.
Because when I'm like, yeah, think about East Asian cultures. No, there's a lot of East Asian cultures obsessed with.
Oh, sure, there is. Yeah,
the legacy also.
Sure, that's true. I understand that.
And I think it's not even necessarily a modern thing. I think it's been around before. I mean, the British Empire is entirely that. The British Empire is one giant attempt at legacy by every individual and by every polity in that group. And I suffer from it a lot. I've been working on it. It's a very zen position to be like, someday nobody's going to even remember me. And that's cool. Like,
is it?
That's the thing. That concept freaks me out.
Really?
I know it should be cool, and I appreciate that it is, and it's fine. And as time goes on, I'm realizing more and more that, to my mind, existence as a whole, both life and society, are an accident, a brilliant, wonderful accident. But therefore, when certain parts of it end, like me, that's fine. Moved on, and it was a beautiful thing when it was there, and then it left.
Well, but also,
something else beautiful will show up.
But also, it doesn't erase that you were there. I mean, even if nobody remembers it.
Well, then you get very philosophical.
Well, my point is...
Then we get a little bit tree falling in the woods at that point.
I suppose, but my point is, for whatever reason, the way I was raised, and maybe also the way I processed things when I was younger, because as I often point out, I experienced death and mortality very early in my life and had to cope with it in some pretty dramatic ways. I probably just through the influence of my parents and grandparents and my own experiences, I just early in my life made peace with this idea, right? That one day you'll be not just dead, but forgotten. And so it just doesn't...
Yeah.
So when people talk about it bothering them, it kind of throws me off. Like,
well, a lot of people can't cope with the idea that they'll be dead.
Yeah, that's true.
And a quick answer again is children, because you gave birth to them, because your genetic material created them, anything they accomplish later, or even their kids and their kids and their kids, you get credit for.
That's weird.
And then there's people who don't buy into any of that shit, and then their answer is, I'm going to write a great novel. I'm going to build a giant building that'll last for hundreds of years. I'm going to...
You know, I suppose that's why.
Our current president,
right,
his entire deal is his legacy.
And maybe that's why this intrigues me, because I do things like I've written books or whatever, and so I hear people talk about, who say what you just said. Yeah. Well, some people do this. And that's so disconnected from my motivation that I... Am I doing something wrong, or do I not realize that's my motivation when it really is? I don't feel like that's my motivation.
Well, but that's a simple one. I don't think it would be too hard for you to understand that a lot of people seek fame and or fortune.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are closely tied to that. When you wrote your books, you definitely are not seeking fame and or fortune. No. So the fact that you're writing for different reasons there, it shouldn't be any more surprising that some people also do it to leave a legacy behind.
Yeah, okay.
And I got to be honest, although I don't think in terms of the time, part of the reason I write books is I desperately want somebody to read one of my books and have it impact their life in the way that a lot of the great books I've read, like, had a demonstrable impact on how I think on things.
Sure, sure.
And I don't even have to be told about it later. I just want to think that happened.
Yeah.
And that's a legacy, too. I mean, it's less so in that I'm going for breadth instead of depth in terms of the timeline, but it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I gotcha. Sure.
I write because I want to influence.
Sure, sure.
We're not getting a question again, by the way. We're already over time.
I'm sorry.
I think it's okay because I feel like this was a very interesting conversation. And it was very on par with something we might have pulled out the hat that was written by somebody who wasn't Azure Talon.
Maybe. I just had that question for a long time and I wanted to ask you about it because, you know, you always give insightful.
I honestly think you need to start anything you're ever confused about, front load it with, well, I was raised weird, so...
But it's hard for me to think that I was raised weird. I mean,
no, and I understand that.
I'm taking your word for it.
When you explain things to me, you frequently start with, because see, the way my parents raised me, and I'm like, well, right there. Because you're always been like, I was raised this. Why are people acting like they weren't?
Well,
Because they weren't.
No, I'm not. That's actually not the question I'm asking. What confuses me is when I think people are saying, human beings are like this.
Well, yeah. Anytime somebody says that, they're wrong.
Yeah.
That's just a given.
But I hear that all the time, that human beings are like this.
Yeah, no, that's always wrong.
I'm not like that. A lot of the people I grew up with weren't like that,
no,
so that can't be true.
Anybody who says human beings like this, unless they are talking about physiologically provable things, are wrong.
So, yeah, I can understand how people can have different views than I have, but the problem I had with what this guy said wasn't what he said, but he seemed to be asserting that this is how human beings are.
Oh, yeah, shitty movie. Yes, no.
But that's not the first time I've heard someone say that.
No. Because
I hear people say it all the time.
Because what human beings are like deep inside, not physically, but metaphysically, is a major push for so many schools of philosophy,
right.
Including stoner philosophy in the middle of a shitty art film. Like, so many people want to get into what drives humanity? What separates us from the animals? Because otherwise we're like, well, what drives us is surviving long enough to have kids and da-da-da-da-da-da. We're like, no, more than that. What is it? And so they come up with shit, and it's... See, here's the thing. You were confused by it, and the reason you were confused by it is it was a guy saying, my personal experience is universal to my species.
Yeah, yeah.
But... your argument also frequently comes to my this is the thing. It's like you frequently draw things to your personal experience and then get confused when you broaden out beyond that.
Well, of course.
And you shouldn't be because your personal experience was unusual.
I do get confused that way. But again, I've never had a problem with someone else having a different perspective than mine.
Problem. You've never been bothered. You frequently have been confused.
Yeah, confused. But
and that's what we're addressing here. You're not saying this guy was bad.
No.
I'm saying that. You're not saying
I'm also not saying he was wrong about his experience.
No, you're just confused by
it. I'm confused by the assertion that everyone's like this when I know it's not true that everyone's
like
this.
Yes. You can just cover that. Anytime somebody says everybody's like something, they are wrong.
Well, but see, I'm also...
It's like when people say always and never.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm also entertaining the notion that I might be wrong. Like, when he said this, it seemed wrong to me because I don't think I'm like that, and I know a lot of other people who aren't like that, but what if I am like that, and I just am not admitting it to myself, or I just don't understand?
Yeah, no, no. You're, no.
Okay.
Like, if we're talking about... If we're... I mean, you totally might be like that. I don't know. But what I'm saying is any assertion that all humans are like blah, 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 wrong.
Yeah.
So you might be like that, but it's still not true that everybody's like that.
Okay. All right.
Now, if we lose a lot of population, we might get to a point where we have few enough people that we can say all of the existing people are like this.
But, right. Gosh, I hope that doesn't happen.
And there are common threads and things like that, but it's a lot of it is culturally bound. A lot of it is very myopic viewpoint. Again, people saying, well, and you get this constantly. People who want to believe, I'm a bad person, but yeah, because everybody's bad. That kind of thing. Or deep in my heart, I feel like I'm a good person. And deep in my heart, I believe everybody's good. None of this is true. Everybody's not anything.
There is a strong, there does seem to be a strong impulse to take things that are cultural and insist that they're not cultural, they're universal.
I think there's also a fear of difference involved. Well, for in some cases, it's rationalizing how you are.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also this idea that people still get nervous about difference, and I understand it. I get that too. I mean, I don't object to it. But when I encounter people who are significantly different from me in a way, well, okay, the huge one. I've talked about it before. I'm very uncomfortable around people with very obvious disabilities. And it is 100% my problem, and I work really hard to not be the thing, but it makes me uncomfortable. And not because I think they're bad or anything. I don't know. I just feel weird. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to interact. And the answer is they're just people treat them like people. But it's a thing I have.
Sure.
And I think if part of the way you can help it, if you're like, I'm very uncomfortable. Some people are uncomfortable around you.
Oh, I know that.
And a lot of that is, again, because you were raised in very different ways, so you have a very different perspective. And that difference makes them uncomfortable. People who feel like they're bad people are uncomfortable around people they feel are good people. And so they want to rationalize that they are bad because of certain universal impulses and everybody's like that. And if they don't look like they're like that, it's denial. People who feel uncomfortable because they are obsessed with a legacy want to believe that that's normal because everybody's like that. People who feel they're a good person because of this specific thing want to validate that either by saying everybody's like that or validate it by saying most people aren't like that. That's what makes me special.
That's so complicated.
But it's all about being a way to be comfortable with yourself by making unilateral statements about everybody else. And if your personal life experience backs them up, you're set. Because technically, you have never witnessed otherwise.
Sure. Why are so many people uncomfortable with themselves?
I don't know. Because they're not as awesome as me. All humans are not as awesome as me.
We just solved everything just now. I think just now we solved everything. Yep. In episode 390, everything is solved.
We didn't even need a hat question. Sorry about that, guys. We're getting a little bad on that. But I saw it. I saw the time, and I was like, no, well, we're on a good
this
thing.
This is
here.
Our only visit time once a week. Right.
And sometimes every 2 weeks.
And sometimes I want to ask you things. And
you can still email me. For instance, we didn't talk about binge watching at all. We covered that earlier. That's fine.
Know, but... Sometimes I think it'd be fun for the listeners to hear what we want to talk about, or
I think the listeners will find this interesting.
Okay, well, I hope so.
Now, at this point, there's only like six of them, and I know specifically who they are, so I think that's true. Whether or not humans as a whole would find this interesting, I don't know. But this may be a record for our longest episode ever, so we should probably stop.
Okay.
If you'd like to learn more about leaving a legacy... there's lots of dead people who wrote books about it, and you should remember them via their works. We didn't even get into the whole thing of people who believe that the entire purpose of this life is just to prove you are deserving to get into the afterlife.
Yeah, that's right. That's a whole other thing.
Different kind of legacy.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen again next week and go back and listen to all the other ones again if you already did, and for the first time if you haven't. Listen to them several times, you know, until we're bored into your head there. Like, and we are just your inner monologue all the time. And in the meantime, Spider-Man.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.